Good afternoon and welcome everyone to the Bus and Rail Subcommittee meeting today on Tuesday, November 12th, 2024. As you just heard, this meeting is being recorded and the meeting audio will be placed on our website, which is WMATA.com. I would like to share a few helpful tips. People who are joining through phone calls, you can press star six to mute or unmute yourself. And if you'd like to make comments, you can virtually raise or lower hands by pressing star nine. Everybody who's on the video conference, you can click on the hand icon to raise or lower your virtual hands. And if you click on the speaker icon, that will mute or unmute yourself. We request everyone to please stay on mute unless you're speaking because it helps eliminate any external noise. as a reminder, okay, we have a packed agenda today. So we do request everyone to please briefly describe yourselves when you're speaking initially. For instance, I'm a female, I'm Asian Indian, I wear reading glasses, I'm wearing a black and red top today. Chair Calabia, if you concur, I can go ahead and take the roll call. Excuse me, I can read the agenda and then take the roll call of the committee member.
Please do.
Okay, so before I start reading the agenda, I would share my screen. And when my screen is shared, if somebody can confirm it for me, I would appreciate that.
Not yet.
Sure. Okay.
Not yet.
Yeah. Now?
No.
Okay, how about now?
Now.
Okay, thank you for confirming. Just like we said, after I finish reading the agenda, we will go through the roll call of the committee members, and then Chair Calabia will go through the motion of reviewing and approval of today's meeting agenda and last month's meeting minutes. We are going to have Don Drummer, the board member, with us to discuss Prince George's County bus desert. And then we will have Sarah Meyer. She is the Executive Vice President and Chief Customer Experience Engagement Officer to discuss Braille machines, Braille machine review. This morning, the AAC had an opportunity to have a site visit for this topic, so she'll be going over that. We are going to have a discussion about an update about the Better Bus Network redesign. To discuss that, we will have Peter Caffiero. He's the Vice President of Service Planning and Scheduling, along with William Jones. He is the Planning Program Manager of Office of Planning. In December, we have the winter shutdown coming up. To discuss that, we are going to have Teresa Thomas, Supervisor of Wayside Work Planning, Bobby Gilchrist, he is the Program Manager of Bus Operations, along with Erica Cunningham, she is the Vice President of Community Relations and Outreach. We're going to have public comment period at 5:45, and then the meeting is scheduled to adjourn at 6 p.m.
Thank you.
You're most welcome. I'm going to stop sharing the screen. I'm going to roll call of the committee members. When I call out your name, please confirm your presence. Susan Bowmaster. Darnese Bush.
Darnese is here, but she's muted.
Yes, thank you, Dr. Bolson. I was going to say she's on the meeting. Tina Calabia.
Present.
Thank you. Vanessa Coles. Rico Dancy. Actually, Rico informed that due to health reasons, he will not be able to join today's meeting.
Okay.
Tuan Farmer. Debbie Fisher, Marcy Goldstein.
Yeah.
Thank you. Steve Caffin.
Present.
Thank you. Thomas Mangren.
Present.
Thank you. Philippa Mazel.
Present.
Thank you. Sandy Newsell.
Present.
Thank you. Bill Posner.
Present.
Thank you. Sarah Rod.
Present.
Thank you. Doris Ray.
No.
Denise Rush.
Present.
Thank you. Paul Semelfour. Patrick Sheehan.
Here.
Thank you. Kelly Simonov. And Philip Weintraub. Okay, that concludes the roster for today's meeting, Chair Calabia. I just
Anu? Want
to... Doris?
This is Doris, right?
Okay.
I was muted and I didn't get muted, unmuted.
Okay, okay. Okay.
Thank you, Doris. I'll mark you present.
And Debbie Fisher is also here. Anu.
Okay, thank you. All right. So before we go on further, I just want to remind any members of the public, if you would like to make any comments during the public comment section, if you're able to do so, please either send me a chat message or raise your virtual hands when we begin the public comment section so that we can take members of the public in the order received. Each member will have 2 minutes to make their comments. We practice this time limit to ensure that any members of the public who intend to make comments get an opportunity to do so. And at this point, Chair Calabia, I would ask for you to move the meeting forward. You have the floor.
Yes. First of all, thanks everybody for coming. You've heard the roll call called, and also now we are looking at the agenda, and any objections to today's objections? Hearing none, the agenda is adopted. Are there any other questions at this point? Okay, so we'll move forward, right, Anu? All right, and the first item is to again, hear from Don Brummer. I think I saw him on the screen. Don, hello?
Yes, Mr. Brummer is here.
Yes, you did. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much for an opportunity to attend this subcommittee meeting and to be a part of this process. I have to tell you, I have tremendous respect for the AAC. I've not been involved and engaged in the processes, but I've received your reports. And I just have to say that I have overwhelming respect for the work that you do and the influence you've had in WMATA. Just by way of proceeding, the subject area on your agenda talks about the Prince George's County bus desert. And today, what I want to do is narrow the focus and be very efficient in our time and respect for your time.
Excellent.
And I want to establish some objectives up front. And one of them is to, one, our goal is to clarify AAC concerns, and in particular, the committee concerns. Secondly, we want to close the gap in communication between Prince George's County and the AAC. And then secondly, we want to lay a foundation for moving forward with a positive relationship. You all have always been very respectful, but certainly in the last board meeting at WMATA, it became very clear that information wasn't flowing in both directions and there were some gaps. So today, we will jumpstart that process. And I have the honor, and I want to express appreciation to both of them. Two people are on this virtual meeting. One is Jonathan Rogers from the Maryland Department of Transportation, and the other is Victor Weisberg from Prince George's County. Today, our focus is not in addressing Prince George's County bus desert, but to give you, one, an introduction to both of them and two, to lay the foundation for the future. So I'll start with Jonathan. Can you introduce yourself?
Hi, thank you, Don. This is Jonathan Rogers. I apologize for not being on video. I'm the Washington Area Transit Director with MDOT, and thankful for the time and ability to hear your comments and concerns. And thank you, Don, for that agenda. I think that sounds great.
Thank you. And Jonathan is one of our go-tos. Let me tell you, he makes things happen with this administration. We have seen a lot of impact and power that we hadn't had in the past in the Maryland Department of Transportation, and we're most appreciative of the work that he has done for us so far. Secondly, we have Victor Weisberg from Prince George's County. On very short notice, Victor has agreed to join us in this session, and he has agreed to be a link to try to gain some traction with regard to closing the communications gap that we've had with the AAC and with Prince George's County. Vic, can you introduce yourself?
Oh, absolutely. Thank you, Board Member Drummer, for to Jonathan for making us aware of some of the concerns of the advisory committee. And as Board Member Drummer, appropriately stated, you know, we want to set the foundation. We want to be able to have a dialogue and a mechanism for communications with this committee. So we really do see this as an opportunity to you know, forge that relationship. There has been an awful lot going on in the transit planning world, as you are very familiar with the BBNR process. Prince George's County worked very closely with WMATA as on the BBNR process, and continues to work very closely in terms of how the different systems can work together synergistically. A piece of that is the transit vision plan for Prince George's County, and the overall report that will encompass how all of that is envisioned to move forward. That draft report is currently in development. We anticipate that it's going to be released in early 2025. And also, stepping back just a little bit, as part of the BBNR process and as part of Vision, the Transit Vision Plan, we really sort of incorporated our outreach as part of what WMATA was doing. And also, we had separate workshops and pop-ups as well through the process. There's a question, yes.
Yes, good afternoon. I just raised it early. I was going to let you finish. But part of the problem in the planning is the planning is generally based upon ridership through particular areas. But some of the areas in the desert have a large population of disabled people who can't ride and possibly would not ride if the stop were put in because they would be using Metro Access in lieu of that. And so one of the suggestions I might make is if there is a way of finding the areas that would be used, dialysis locations, hospital locations, school locations, church locations, and finding out if in fact there were accessible stops these disability folks would actually use the bus. But one of the observations I have made and also heard from residents is a number of the stops that have disappeared are on broken sidewalk or no sidewalk or hilltops that are very difficult for mobility people to get to or low vision people to get to. So the only thing I would ask is that there is an integration of accessibility to the disability community that might not show up in just the ridership numbers. And also, I know you're aware of the fact that you will in January have a new federal senator from Prince George County, and you already have a senator in the Maryland legislature from Prince George County. And so
that's a good
so
point.
Thank you so much.
We will have a new senator who is very familiar with the county. And continue to have very strong representation, both the Senate on the Senate and the House side. Those are very good points. And, I don't want to get, too far into the weeds, but your point about having a sort of a larger, more comprehensive, system, which includes, having not having sidewalk gaps and things of that nature. We are currently, and I don't know all the details, but I know that we are actually very in advancing a mechanism to analyze sidewalk gaps and sidewalk improvement and the quality of sidewalks. And that's a big initiative that hasn't been fully launched. So the details are being finalized right now, but we very much are looking at that. We also have a very robust Vision Zero program, and the Vision Zero team is in the process of rewriting and updating our Vision Zero action plan. We also are a lot of the bus stops, bus shelters are on state road. So we also are working very closely with MDOT and with State Highway on focusing in on where the data shows that traffic that crashes involving pedestrians are the most severe and most prevalent. We are working very hand in glove with them, but also working and looking at our own network as to how we can improve those gaps.
Thank you.
So Vic, did you want to continue your...
Yeah, I can continue. I see a couple of hands, but absolutely. As I was, saying earlier, we are very committed to the process. We have worked very closely with WMATA in developing our transit vision plan and are currently finalizing the draft report. So that report should be released in early 2025. And so we look forward to your comments during that period. In addition, and I can put in the chat when I'm done, the email address, so that you can make comments right away, through the DPWT PGC Transit webs. The email address. So that would be great. Do keep in mind that since 2018, the transit, with the transit vision plan that was released, then there have been a lot of refinements and many plan changes that we are integrating into our soon to be released plans, and we look forward to sharing those plans as highlighted. And I will also drop the link for that into the chat. We also, as Board Member Drummer mentioned, want to really set up a mechanism for communication. We would be happy to either have our staff who are more closely involved in these issues come to a subsequent meeting or set up a separate meeting to be able to discuss these issues. I think that, so, you know, with that, I just want to, you know, thank Jonathan Rogers and board member Drummer and the Access Committee for giving us this opportunity to at least initiate the conversation, initiate the dialogue that we look forward to having as we move forward.
Thank you, Vic. Really appreciate you on very short notice making yourself available to jumpstart this process. Before I proceed, I just want to thank Pat Sheehan for bringing this up in the board meeting to let us know that there are some sensitivities here that we need to address. And Phil, of course, in the past, you've done a great job of communicating and keeping us informed in your past leadership as well. What I want to do is address two topics before closing, just to tell you where we are and where I think we're going. From a perspective of where Vic left off, I think it's important for us to know from an AAC perspective who the point of contact is, who the go-to person is in Prince George's County for the AAC. We don't have to have an answer right now, but Vic, that's something that we probably won't get our arms around to be sure we know who that go-to person is 24/7. And then the second thing I would ask from the AAC, so that we can accurately define what their concerns are, would be in writing a list of the key topic areas of concern that you believe Prince George's County should pay attention to with regard to the AAC. So that list, if you could, Pat, someone could pull together a list of just key topic areas that Prince George's County can focus on as priorities on behalf of the AAC, that would be great. And then Vic, if you could ensure that we identify a good point of contact, and then we'll work out the best format or forum to engage in sharing from that point forward. And I see a lot of hands up, and then I want to make a comment and give you all my perspective as a board member. As a board member, I don't control anybody, but I do represent the state as a gubernatorial appointee, but just as important as a resident of Prince George's County. One of the things that is most important to me to understand, and I really want to get my arms around it over the next 4 or 5 months, is crystal clarity. Somebody, I hope you can mute your background. Crystal clarity on statewide requirements, but in particular, Prince George's requirements, capabilities, the gaps, the planning, programming, and budgeting surrounding transit and the way ahead. Because once we see the comprehensive requirements, then we can move into where does accessibility fall as a subset within that. Oftentimes, we address problems as eaches, or we address micro issues when it's part of a bigger picture. And what I need to do is see the bigger picture from Prince George's County. So, Vic, I think you have that in perspective. I think it's important and critical for us to see that and understand that in the long run. As a board member, I think it would be very valuable as we proceed. At this time, I don't know how much time you have, Mr. Chair, but I see three hands up, so I'll put it back in your hands.
You do. Anu, could you call hands up?
Yes, absolutely. So it's Thomas, followed by Steve, and then Pat. Thomas, go ahead and unmute yourself.
Yes, this is Thomas. I want to ask about Metro Access, because like, my ride's been late a lot of times for doctor's appointments. I had a ride today that was late. Why have you? And a ride earlier that somebody called me about why y'all was when the meeting that started, that was late. Another doctor's appointment. So, but I was told that Metro Access don't have enough drivers anymore. So either the drivers quit or what have you. I don't know what's going on. But they try to put a lot of the rides on Uber. But Uber is okay for people that don't use mobility equipment. I use a wheelchair. So that automatically knocks me out when I have to use Uber. And the driver before that they called me about, he took a lunch break when he must have been scheduled to pick me up. And he didn't call nobody to let them know so they could switch me to another ride. So could y'all check on that for me? Because I do got another trip scheduled for tomorrow.
Thomas,
and I would like for the ride to be on time.
Thomas, next week is the Metro Access subcommittee meeting, and those kind of details are best handled at that meeting.
Right, I know, and I hear you on that. But next month, I won't be here for the first Monday or the second Monday of December. I'll be out of town. So I'm getting ready to go.
It'll be on the record, and it can be brought up in the Metro Access meeting, which is next Monday.
Okay.
Steve, and then Pat.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks for the presentations. Particularly number two is very important. You may get a great deal of benefit in the analysis you're doing prior to introducing in early 2025 the plan, and that's that a lot of work was done by the Better Bus Initiative people. I was the DC representative for us on that committee, and in sitting through some of the meetings, my understanding was that Prince George's County was getting an important share of the focus and the changes. So before you release this document, you might want to coordinate with them because some of what you have in there, you may be able to call completed, and that will be a more useful document for everybody. Thanks.
Thanks.
Pat?
Thank you, Tino. I want to first start off by saying thank you, Don, Jonathan, and Victor. Appreciate you coming. Appreciate the reports. I think a lot of the testimony that I gave before the board was based on the, I guess it was the 2018 to 2022 report. So I would think that going forward, the best way to move forward is to wait for the new report to come out. Hopefully that will come out very soon and make recommendations based on that. We know that 2/3, I think, of the Metro Access trips come from Prince George's County. There are some smaller networks within the county that provide transportation, but they're very disability focused, but they are not really part of the overall fixed route. So I'm looking forward. I think that's the best way to move forward based on the new data that will and recommendations coming out of that new report. I don't want to jump on recommendations that are 4 years old. But I think that this is a priority. I also think the best way perhaps to move forward is looking at the transit vision plan that will come out, but also incorporate those recommendations into DMV moves, because there's a lot of what's going on in DMV moves that is going to reflect a regional transit concept. And I think that's what Prince George's County in the big picture really needs to, we really want that to happen, Prince George's County wise. Being able to figure out what our priorities are as far as things like the connector ride or dollar ride or the bus versus things like sidewalks, how many miles of sidewalks are needed, installation of the bus shelters, and all of the infrastructure stuff, I think is something that this committee, and I would encourage this committee to do this, the bus rail committee, to go through that new report, sit down and figure out what our top recommendations are. Love to feed them into the make sure they're, Steve, as you said, in the Bed and Bus Network, and I think they are in the new, in the visionary plan, and then push that forward as part of DMV Moves. It's all part of the same program. So I appreciate particularly Prince George's County stepping up to the plate, getting us a rep that we can run our ideas through, and then being able to go up to the board in the next few months and say, you know what, we have a plan going forward to enhance transportation in Prince George's County. And we're going to do it A, B, C, D, working through Better Bus Network, DMV Moves, and Prince George's County Transit Vision Plan to move the ball forward. And that's what I'm interested in. And I thank this subcommittee and also the three of you for coming here and helping to kick off this plan for Prince George's County. Thank you.
Thanks, Pat. And we do have representatives who will be discussing the Better Bus Redesign Network coming up just now, as a matter of fact. But Sandy, who has been, who met with Senator Augustine and Delegate Lewis in August, is there, and I see she has her hand up. Sandy, please add whatever thought you have on this. I know you've tried to figure the documents that were available, but that was a tough slug. So Sandy, please.
Okay, Sandy Newzell, I want to sort of say ditto to everything Pat said, and I'm very reassured that Victor has stated that you are aware and working with the WMATA board, and it sounded like you were also aware of DMV Moves. And yes, this kind of coordination is so important. And I'm really embarrassed that, you know, looking around, we couldn't find anything more recent than the 2018 draft plan. Perhaps your draft of the plan that will come out in 2025 was not available to us, and that's why we didn't see it. But I'm very reassured by your comments tonight, and I think, yes, going forward, we can we'll come up with our end of what you asked for. And like Pat said, perhaps going back and regrouping might be best done after the draft, as the draft report is coming out in early 2025. But thank you so much for coming to the meeting. And thank you, Mr. Drummer, for fast forwarding this connection for us.
Yes, ditto. Thank you very much.
Most welcome.
And also, Victor, any last thoughts? If not, we'll move into a related subject, which is the Better Bus Network redesign. We have representatives from WMATA who are going to present us with that. And I think they are...
Here's Flavia.
Yes.
Apologies for interruption. However, if Sarah Meyer is connected, I have not seen her yet because she had some time constraints. If she is connected, then we may need to go to the Braille machines review. So if you could give me just a quick moment to ensure if she is connected or not. Otherwise, we can move forward with the agenda.
Okay. Thank you, Anu.
Of course. And I'm not seeing her as of yet, so that's fine.
Okay, then should we move into the item regarding the Better Bus Redesign Network?
Sure. Sure, please.
Yes, let's see, Peter Calfiero there and William Jones?
They are surely connected, yes.
And Sarah will be here in about 3 to 5 minutes.
Oh, she will be, Erica. Thank you so much. So in that case, Chair Calabia, how did you want to move forward since Sarah will be joining up in about 3 to 5 minutes?
Okay. Well, maybe we could hear from some of the bus rail
members
who made the trip to look at Sarah will be talking about. Sandy, you were there, I think.
Yes, I was there, and we had a really good tour of how the old machines worked for making Braille signage. It's very labor intensive, sort of one sign at a time, but the one sign is made in several parts or in several steps. They described it as three steps. I would describe it as four steps. So on average, they could make one sign an hour, kind of, you know, five or six or seven signs in an 8-hour shift. And then they took us over to the new room to see the new sign making machine for raised lettering and Braille. And it uses a different technique. And it's basically, I would describe it as a 3D ink printer. So it just built up in, you know, pass, back and forth. The machine would sweep back and forth and build up the layers in ink in the exact locations for letters or graphics and Braille bump dots. So that made it almost just one step instead of four. And it's a faster process, and I believe, well, certainly less expensive because fewer man hours, but I'm sure Sarah can go into better details about that.
And she has joined.
Okay, good. Okay. I'll stop talking so Sarah can explain.
Yes.
Sure. Hi, everybody. So I'm really happy that members of the AAC were able to join us today at the sign shop at in Landover, Maryland, and where we are unveiling and starting to use some new technology that allows us to catch up with the backlog of signage requests that we've had in the system. I think we just haven't been able to keep up with the number of signs that are out there and the changing information, right? We've had terminal changes in the past 2 years, and there might be more terminal changes. So the amount of signage that is needed requires that we look at different materials and more efficiencies, and thrilled that we're on our way. You know, Pat and Sandy and others were able to see what the new sign printer produces. And of course, we have some more follow-up questions we need to chase down, but just happy to be, you know, on our way creating more signs that will be helpful to people as they try to navigate around the rail system.
Yes. Did you want to respond, Sandy?
I think, you know, it might be nice for, I don't have a response off the top of my head at the moment. I will say that in the sign shop, Sarah also pointed out other types of signs that are made. And the staff was talking about, you know, some of the signs that are outside of metro stations, you know, to see what the name of the metro station is as you're entering it. You know, obviously the big M metro symbol is at all stations, but then the name is in smaller lettering, maybe 3-4 inches high. And those can be made at the shop. And that's, you have to be cutting metal to make those letters, but it's so impressive that Metro does this in-house. They don't have to contract it out. And often contracting out requires sort of bulk orders. These guys can do it individual orders on demand as needed, as signs are damaged and need to be replaced. I was very impressed. Maybe our new AAC member, Sarah Rott, who was on the tour, might want to make a comment.
Sarah?
Hi there. Yeah, it was a great tour. It was really nice to see the plant and all the folks that were working there. They're very welcoming and very understanding and answered all kinds of crazy, strange questions from us. I would say ditto to what Sandy said. I think it's really impressive that all those signs are being made in one place. And it was really helpful to sort of understand why some signs are the way they are. I learned a lot. So anyway, I wanted to thank everybody for hosting us. It was a great experience.
Sarah Meyer, about how many such signs need to be made per station?
So it really depends, right, on the size of the station and the number of decision points that somebody has during their walk through, right? And there isn't, I don't know if there's a criteria that we have, but it's something we can certainly look at. What we're very conscious of is that it does take an enormous amount of design and production effort to make signs. And the way that we run the railroad is that we might change terminals or we might change pathways. And so we want to be really careful around what we communicate in a static, right? Not in a screen, a static sign, because it is really costly to replace, especially in Virginia, where the new Silver Line stations, that a lot of that material is actually porcelain enamel and not aluminum, which is the material of choice for all of us for, you know, reasons, because it's more cost effective. And so the thoughts around when and how to replace signs is something that's very much on our mind. And I'm glad that we're making these investments so that we can certainly make our signage more readable and accessible to all of our audiences.
Sarah, we've been talking about signs that would be posted in stations. On the other hand, there are individual riders, some of whom may have the spiral bound portable maps. I don't know if Sandy has shown you hers, but hers is the kind that regular riders who are blind or low vision might carry with them. And was this ever discussed, Sandy, or you, Sarah?
It was discussed. And the point that we made was that there needs to be more connection between the printed material and the material that's on the signs. Because what's happening, right, is that we might be wanting to communicate more with icons. But on the printed map or the printed work that Sandy might be reviewing isn't all connected. So I think what we need to do a better job of here at WMATA is making sure that we articulate, especially to those with low vision, what the icons are and what they mean.
Okay, let's see. Anup, could you name sure. The order with hands up?
Yes. So we have Doris Ray, followed by Pat Sheehan, and then Denise Rush. So Doris, if you would unmute yourself and ask your question.
Yes, thanks. Thank you for coming. I was just wanting to clarify, previously, it's my recollection that there was tactile signage, I think though it was primarily Braille, on the pylons that gave the list of upcoming stations going in either direction. And that's all I recall, like, not counting elevator buttons and that kind of standard stuff. And I don't know whether that's part of what you're talking about, but I'm curious whether that is the only real tactile signage that's still in the stations, or whether there's other signage that are actually in the stations. I do want to say that the last time I used it, that I think it was difficult because it was the braille was printed on strips that went over the pylon signage for the stations and upcoming and I think that technique may cause some diminishment of the clarity of the visual image because there's a lot of contrast, but if you put something on top of a sign, then for some people with vision disabilities, that causes a kind of barrier in being able to see the sign properly. But the other thing I want to ask about is, we've discussed at this meeting the need really to put tactile signage on bus shelters, bus bays, at especially at big terminal stations like Vienna or Silver Spring. Mm-hmm. Or, and is that what this machine and this technique is going to be used for in the future?
Yeah, so the good news, right, about this, the new printer, is that it allows us to make more raised lettering and braille signs at a much greater rate. So the hope is that we have more of those all across the system. And, you know, certainly recognize that our bus bay signage needs to be improved. And that is definitely on our list after we get the Better Bus plan implemented, if the board does, you know, approve that plan. I am holding, right, on doing bus bay signage, because I don't want to create signage that then just needs to be replaced 2 months later. So we're holding on that front, but that's part of the reason we're buying all these machines, all these machinery pieces. We did actually walk by another machine that cuts steel with water, which I did not know was possible. And it seems, you know, a really cool thing that will reduce the hours it takes to cut steel significantly, which they've been previously doing with welding machines and fire, right? So having this new technology allows us to make signs faster and hopefully up on to the bus stop pole or to the shelter if that's something that's available to us.
Amazing. But
the last thing I want to ask is, isn't there some kind of national production house or something that all transit authorities can use? So if there is a system for, you know, if there's a more uniform system for numbering, whatever, signing buses, that it could be done more quickly, and that transit authorities like WMATA could simply install them, you know? Is there such a thing? Or is everybody doing something different?
So I'm not aware. I do know that there's shared standards, but I'm not aware of a shared production facility that we could use. I'm aware of standards, but my assumption is if you're asking somebody to make something for you, there would have to be some sort of contractual agreement. And I'm not aware of that.
Yeah, no, I just didn't know whether Patrick? There was industry-wide. Thank you.
Patrick?
Thank you, Tino. Yes, to answer your question on that, I'm working with the ANSI group, Doris, and there is no national group that's doing that. A national group would love to be formed. It would make a lot of money. But I think in this particular venue, having this shop inside WMATA is absolutely huge. And the new technology that we're looking at is just fabulous. They are also looking at putting, revising the signs so they are more easily readable with the station at the top of the sign. And so the signs are uniform. They do meet ADA standards with the tactile pieces up at the top, meeting ADA standards. And then the Braille portion is 5/8 of an inch below that, which of course meets ADA standards. So the, as far as the printing is concerned, it is all there. They're using what's called grade 2 Braille with contractions, which is what most everyone who is blind is going to read. Not, I didn't quite understand if it's the most current version of it. I don't know if it's UEB, so I can't answer that. But I know a lot of people will be able to understand the grade 2 Braille. With contractions. So you've got capital letters with the, you know, that are easy to read, standard horizontal text for both the tactile and the Braille. What impressed me the most, and I had a couple conversations with a couple of people, is that the color contrast for that sign is at least 70% and maybe up to 90%, which certainly meets and exceeds ADA standards. So I was extremely pleased about that. You're looking at a department that is 12 people in it. And one of the things that Sarah alluded to, and they explained even more, is that because they're putting in a process now that will allow them to increase sign production by 90% because of the new technology, they will be able to get into the backlog and do a lot of the backlog that they haven't been able to do. These 12 people are in charge of not only signage in the stations, but also signage in and around the stations, in the parking lots, in the parking garages, and all of that. So anytime that we can have more them working and producing, you know, more uniform signage in the stations, that means they'll be able to get to the backlog. So great tour today, Sarah. I appreciate the time that was spent. The technology there is very impressive. But I just wanted to also point out to this committee that they're looking at things like color contrast, the effect of what the lights will do to the sign so they're not, you know, just blotted out because you've got lighting behind it or too much lighting around it. Very sensitive to those kinds of issues. So kudos to everybody. And Sarah, I appreciate all the work that you're doing, particularly coming back to this committee and you know, letting us know what's going on, being a partner with you.
It sounds like in terms of transit systems around the country, Sarah's leading the way from here.
Yeah, I would say certainly, one of the leading.
I appreciate that very much, but I do have to defer that to my colleagues who work in the sign shop, who have been advocating for this technology for a long time, and they've been reading up on it and recommending. So just giving them a little bit more voice, I think was very helpful here, and getting their requests through procurement, which you can understand is they're not always prioritized. So we need to, you know, give our folks a little bit more voice every once in a while.
Well, my point is that maybe other transit systems will come to you too, and your team.
I hope so. Thank you.
Denise?
Yes, this is Ms. Rush. I would like to know, are they going to let the public know where there are restrooms that are accessible?
Yes, Ms. Rush. And when we were there, we actually saw some of the new restroom signage being produced. So they're getting there.
Is that going to be on some kind of planner also, so we'll know how to plan? Don't get off this stop because it's not available for you know, the older people and the public, period.
Agree with you in it. That's something we'll look at.
Okay.
Thank you.
Vanessa?
Alert. Audio now in music.
Yes. Hi. Thank you. This is Vanessa. I'm an African-American middle-aged woman. My question is, in the future, when more stations are added or when things are changed, how difficult would that be to keep that those kind of Braille pads updated?
Yeah, it's a good question and one that I think we're equipping the sign shop. They're in a better position now to be able to respond to infrastructure expansion.
Yeah, that's a great idea. Thank you.
Sure.
Okay.
Fabio, we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
I figured, and we're running behind. But thank you again, Sarah, for joining us. We certainly appreciate the kind of work that you and your team are doing. And I think, again, it may even benefit the transit systems around the country. Thank you again, Sarah.
Thank you, guys. Bye.
Next item is the Better Bus Network redesign. Is Peter Caffiero here and William Jones?
Yes, we are okay. Here.
Yes, well, the show is yours.
All right, well, thank you. My name is Peter Caffiero. I'm the Vice President of Service Planning and Scheduling for Washington Metro. And I've been one of the co-directors on this project, the Better Bus Initiative. And we're really excited to be here tonight and talking about where we stand at this point. We have a short presentation. William, who's my colleague, who's one of our main team members here, who's been really helping to plan this network out. We'll start the presentation and go through the first part. I'll take some of the slides at the end, and then we'd be happy to take questions.
Currently, I'm waiting for access to share the screen.
William, you should be able to share the screen now. We can see
All right.
Thank you.
And here we go with that. Is it still showing?
It's showing, although it's got your talking points on the right, William.
Okay. What about, are we good there? Is it showing better or worse?
Well, we can see your slide without the talking points, which is, I think, what you want to be showing us.
Yeah.
Oops.
Now it's showing the talking points again.
All right. I mean, well, I don't know how you. It's like showing the next slide. It's the presenter view for some reason. Hide presenter view. Maybe that.
There we go.
You just had that.
All right. Let's just.
All right. Well, we can do that.
Okay, let's see how the
yes,
there we go. Yeah. All right, sorry about that. Now we're yes. Good to go.
You are, yes.
Okay.
All right, Peter, you want to? We can roll with it. All right.
Yeah. No. This is good.
Okay.
You're starting, right?
Yeah. Sure. Okay. So as you all have been aware, we've shared with you all on a few occasions over the past couple of years the need and purpose of redesigning the network. We have a region that's still growing. We're looking at over 3,000 people coming to the region a month, and over 2,000 jobs each month in the region. As we have come out of the pandemic, the patterns have changed in terms of service throughout the region and the needs of residents throughout the region, with a need for all day, 7 day a week across the region services. So not just the traditional patterns. Residents and customers have told us that frequency is very important to them and that the travel time should be more competitive when you're thinking about someone being in an automobile or taxi cab or Lyft, Uber, the ability to be able to travel at a shorter time than what had been current. And we've been doing all of this and seeking to do all this and make all these improvements within the limited resources that we have. And we've been working very hard to expand service with those same resources by being more efficient. This work has been a unique effort in working with the municipal service providers throughout the region. We've been working with eight of the municipalities, with seven of them operating their own services. And at the beginning of the project, we met with leaders in each city and county to establish an individualized coordination plan. As discussed earlier in this meeting, we've been working with Prince George's County, the bus service, as they've been a full partner throughout this effort. We also worked with the city of Fairfax to analyze the Q services, which the city of Fairfax is working through their transit development plan process, which is a state mandated process for the city of Fairfax to follow. But we also been working with Montgomery County as they conduct their Ride On Reimagined study, as we worked with DASH back in 2018, 2019 on the Alexandria Transit Vision Plan. And we've been working closely with the other systems, working with Fairfax as they have done their work in Chantilly, Centerville, Vienna, and Tysons. We worked with Arlington County as they were developing their strategic plan efforts as well. And in terms of this, we want to talk about the approach to the Better Bus Network. So, Peter, if you want to take that one. You're on mute, I believe.
It's only 4 years and still forget to do that. So the goal of the Better Bus plan, and as William said, we are advancing right now what we're calling our 2025 program. So that will be, if approved, what we will implement probably in the summer of 2025. So it's nothing's changing tomorrow or next month, but and as Sarah mentioned, there's going to be a lot of work that we'll talk about in a little bit on how to educate everybody on it. But we're looking at something we can do in 2025 that's better than what we have today, that uses service more efficiently so that we can provide more service to our riders, but is still within our constraints of our current funding. And the first message we've heard from the public throughout this, we've heard several. One is people want to connect to where they want to go. They would like more frequent service, more consistent service 7 days a week. That's something that we had a lot of success on coming out of pandemic in 2021, where we introduced our frequent bus service network. Those are about network of about 36 routes or so that are either every 12 minutes all day, 7 days a week, or every 20 minutes all day, 7 days a week. And by all day, we mean from at least 7 a.m. in the morning to 9 p.m. in the evening. Doesn't mean that's the only span that those routes go. Many of them go much later than that. But during those periods, there'll be a bus at least every 12 minutes or every 20 minutes. Again, in the rush hours, if with more ridership, we may have more service than that, often do. But that is a commitment that means you can go out to a bus stop and know that a bus will be coming by on a regular basis. And those routes that we've done the frequent service have been our fastest growing routes coming out of pandemic. And particularly in those times of day where service improved the most, particularly on weekends. Especially weekends in Prince George's County, where there hadn't been a lot of service before, but also parts of the district and parts of Virginia and Montgomery as well. So those have been very successful. And with this plan, we are looking to add 11 more routes to our frequent service network. So that's a 30% increase. I mentioned before the connections of where people want to go. Some examples of that are a much improved linkage to Fort Lincoln in Northeast DC, to downtown DC, as well as to Washington Hospital Center, other places, a new route from LaFont Plaza down to National Harbor. So we were looking to connect to employment centers, to entertainment and other places that people are going to as well, but particularly employment, education, shopping. A lot of the focus we've done is on what we call equity-focused communities, which are areas with a higher percentage than the regional average for minorities and low-income customers. And these for those communities are the same as everybody else, but more so because these are riders who really need our services and to get to where they're going, to get to work opportunities, education opportunities, and in particular, don't necessarily travel just Monday to Friday, 9 to 5, but their needs are all week, all days of the week, and most times of the day. We also wanted to make the bus service easier to understand. That's something that we've been working with Sarah Meyer and her team on as well. Our current route network, there's a lot of history behind it, but the route letters and numbers date back to 4 different historic predecessor companies that were merged into Metrobus over 50 years ago. The most well-known of those systems was DC Transit or Capital Transit, which set up the route numbering system in the district in 1936 and used just pure numbers without letters to indicate what were streetcar routes in 1936. It's an interesting historical note, but it's not really useful to our current customers. So there's a lot of, we have routes that are letters and numbers and others that are numbers and letters. So we wanted to have something that was more intuitive for people who are new to the region or new to transit. And lastly, we wanted to make sure we prepared for the future as well as the present. So we want to make sure we use the bus priority lanes, the bus lanes that currently exist, but others that are planned, that we plan for the opening in the next few years of the Purple Line in Maryland. So we look to develop routes that will feed the Purple Line and sort of continue that circular route around the region, and also future planned bus rapid transit lines that the regional partners are developing. Next. We had a lot of public outreach during this process, and I really think that the results of the outreach made our plan better than anything we could have done on our own. We looked at a lot of data, we looked at a lot of what other cities were doing and what our surveys were telling us, but it really we needed to involve the public and all different diverse groups of what that entails in this process. It ended up being 23 weeks of outreach over the little over 2 years of the project. So that's almost 6 months of that 2 year period was spent listening to others and talking to others. And that's time consuming for sure. But as I said, we believe it was really worth it. We did have a number of events and meetings and discussions such as this with public in general or specific groups, over more than 200 events. But we also had dialogue with our bus operators, who are people who know the bus routes as well or better than anybody else, where the problems are, where their problem turns are, or difficulty getting the bus down a street, or concerns about moving it to a new street, what that would mean to riders and to operations. So we spoke with over 800 bus operators. We had over 120 meetings with stakeholders, elected officials, community representatives throughout the project. And that was helpful as well to make sure we were grounded in where everyone was coming from. And then we also, so we had a very robust online presence and got many, many comments through our website and through our tools that we developed for this process. But we also did very old school, literally riding buses and talking to customers on buses, particularly in parts of the region where we felt that we weren't getting as much in terms of comments through some of the other methods, because people are busy, they're going between multiple jobs, they may not hear about a public meeting, but they're on the bus, and we wanted to make sure we talk to them as well. So we received more than 13,000 comments just this past summer in our outreach that started in May and ended in July, which was a lot. That was, I think, more than half of what we got through the whole process. We, Metro staff, actually read each of those more than 13,000 comments collectively. No one person read all 13,000, but all of us divided it up, read through them, categorize, summarize, so we all could get the common sense of what the questions, concerns, input was. About 40% of them were regarding where the route runs, the alignment. We had other comments about the frequency, the span. I would say that many, many of the comments really just wanted even more than we were proposing. They wanted more frequency, more span of service. Some of the routes we'd proposed in our earlier outreach as kind of visionary routes, people were excited about those and wanted those as well. We certainly want to do all that too, but as I said before, we are constrained by the resources we currently have. So we couldn't do everything, but we were trying to do what we could with this and to address the comments. So we did make changes to more than half of the routes that we brought out publicly in the spring during this process. In some cases, we changed the routes to address people's concerns. In some cases, we restored routes that had not been included or segments of routes. In some cases, we modified the span, frequency, the bus stops, et cetera. So we did a lot of adjusting over the summer and fall, and that's where we are today. Next. And William, you can jump in anytime you want to on any of these, but as I mentioned before, equity was something we focused on throughout this project. We knew that as the region is changing, and particularly in pandemic, we saw a lot of needs that might have not been so visible pre-pandemic, when you had a very heavy office worker market going in at 8:30 in the morning, leaving at 5:30 in the evening. It was masking a lot of inter-regional trips, what I call crosstown trips, cutting across the region. They were always there. They've become even more more important now since pandemic, and since more people are working from home as well. A lot of those are not simply rush hour, weekday rush hour trips, but are also middays, evenings, and weekends. And so we focused on those and making sure that routes connected, ideally at both ends of a route, so that the route has more opportunities and function than a route that just is going kind of peak direction to someplace and then coming back in the return. If it can connect at both ends to something, that provides more choices for people. And we also looked at specifically at access to jobs and to job centers as well. Next.
Okay. All right.
William, do you want to take this?
Yeah, sure. So overall, the new network seeks to provide additional service to the average resident across the region, at least 5% more in terms of service, more access to jobs and the key destinations. We also sought to increase the number of routes that were more frequent within the network, So doing that with the 11 additional routes to the frequent service network with its 12 or 20 minutes, we sought to provide more access to weekend service. This is really in places within Prince George's County, providing weekend service and trying to do it more frequently to those areas that currently lack service, and to try to provide greater benefits in terms of access to those destinations more frequently in those areas and communities, equity communities that we were looking at. And all of this, we're hoping to attract up to 13 more thousand riders daily. Moving on in terms of other items, as you see here, we had started out with a process in terms of changes. So we looked at stop consolidation. And of course, when this was discussed back in the spring, we had been looking at a way to speed up service instead of having the buses crawl up and down streets because they're making stops once every block. So we did look at those frequent routes and identified stop locations where they're too close to each other. And also those that lacked safe pedestrian crossing and sidewalks. In the spring, we proposed about 650 stops based upon the feedback received from many in the public. We were able to make some changes and reduce that number, bringing some stops back, making some other locations available for service. One example we had was a place along 23rd Street in Arlington, where we had proposed eliminating stops, and based upon the feedback that we'd heard from the public, we brought that stop back in, or in this case, it will not be eliminated as part of this process. So of the stops at the end of this analysis, it's only about 510 bus stops that would be removed from the network, and all in an effort to help speed up service on those routes. Lastly, we talked about the route renaming that is carrying forward through this process to make it less confusing and to try to make it as intuitive as possible. So, of course, within DC, any route that's heading towards downtown DC, whether that's Metro Center, Gallery Place, Chinatown Station, and the like, those would have a D designated in front again. And those that are running cross town, those and that are not running through downtown, like the routes that run across in Northwest, across Kennedy and Military Road, those will have a C for crosstown. And again, the second character has a number, and then the third character a number that designates one route from the next. Those that are limited stop would have the X identified on the end, and then a change from what we took out, what we shared with you all in the spring. If the third character is a zero, that's the main primary route for that corridor that identified a major route. So for example, on H Street, we'll have the D2X, which is the limited stop service, and the D20 would be the local service. So that's representing the X2 and the X9 currently today. Real quick, we talk about preparing additional investment for the future. So we're still working on developing that visionary network to achieve those goals that you see there in terms of being able to provide service at 30 minutes or better across the region, being able to do that 24-hour network. So we're looking at it. We have a process in place that identifies, or seeks to identify, which services would come online as additional resources are available. We heard that the residents and customers would like to have those more frequent connections, longer span, and more connections throughout the course of the day and the week to multiple destinations. We acknowledge and understand that in order to do that, we need to be looking at how we can achieve that. So that's something that we're continuing to build upon, and being able to add new routes as well, having those connections such as George Mason University and the city of Fairfax with Tyson's more directly. So moving these improvements forward in the coming years will attract more residents and customers and make those trips more convenient and connect to those additional destinations.
Want me to take over?
Sure. Sure. Mr. Tino, we're all right. We're almost done. I think we have one or two more slides left.
Yeah, so,
okay. So we have some questions. There are questions. Right.
I'll just say that we do have a huge lift now in front of us in terms of the process. So this went to our board safety and operations committee last week, and they approved it. It's coming to the full board on November 21st, which is a week from this Thursday. This is earlier than we normally would do for a process that is really for a fiscal year 25, fiscal year 26, excuse me, change. And that's because there is a lot of work that we need to do. There's a team with the sign shop that you were talking about before, with website design, writing schedules, training our operators on where their new routes are, working to inform our customers. It's a major lift, and so we need some extra time to do that. The idea is that we would implement this, we've been saying this summer. It would basically be after school is closed, which, and the weather is good, so we're looking at late June, early July as the target right now. There's as I said, a huge amount of effort that still will need to happen, and I'm sure we will be back to talk to you during that effort as well. Next slide. I mentioned the process in terms of moving forward with the board, but there is on our website a number of resources that you can look at or tell your friends and neighbors and family also about at the WMATA.com/betterbus part of the website. We have network maps by state. We have what we call route profiles, which are basically every one of the new routes has a two-page document that talks about, that is a map of where it's going, and also a table of the frequencies and some other information about the route. We have all of the public comments we got from everybody are on that website, as well as our summary by route of the general comments and how we responded to them and any changes we made because of them. More information about our engagement and other prior documents and our Title VI analysis, which is a federally required process. I think that's all the slides that we had to talk about, so I'd be happy to take questions.
Sure. Peter and William, I don't know if you were on for an earlier discussion about PG County.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, though, that we of the Bus Rail Subcommittee and others are pressing to correct some deficiencies in the lack of buses in some parts of PG County. If that occurs, will you be able to adapt that into the new plan, which goes into effect next year? And another question is that you mentioned that there are going to be over 500 bus stops that are cut. At the moment, there are roughly 11,000 stops. And of those 11,000 some stops, about 500 will be cut. You also mentioned that riders will be able to get about more quickly, but isn't that based in some part on the fact that there will be, say, fewer bus stops, and therefore a bus won't have to stop as often between bus stops? But that doesn't mean that the rider is sitting at home can go out there at any moment or expect to find a bus quicker than before. So I'm curious, there are going to be 500 fewer bus stops, and at the same time, riders are being told that they will be able to get about more frequently. I think I can understand how this will occur, but could you comment on that, Peter or William?
Sure. So let me take the bus stop part, and then I'll start the Prince George's, and William, who's been doing a lot of the coordination with them, can jump in on that as well. So bus stops are a trade-off for all the reasons you're getting at right now. So if you're on the bus and you don't want to get off at that stop, then every stop is a little bit of an annoyance. It doesn't, you know, individually they don't add that much time, but they do add up. And they add up for two reasons. One is the bus is stopping and then slowing down and stopping and then having to speed up. But they also, in many cases, have to try to then merge back into traffic. And so that creates reliability challenges. They get out of sync with the traffic signals, so that further delays the bus. So it adds to travel time, perception of travel time, and it adds to our reliability challenges. On the other hand, if you want to get to a building that's right at that stop, you, of course, want that stop there. So it is a trade-off. And so what we chose to do is first of all, limit what we were looking at. So first of all, just the actual numbers, there's 9,500 WMATA stops, Metro bus stops throughout the region currently. We limited looking to those routes that were our frequent service routes today. So these are the routes generally on the major streets. Our thought was for a bus route that's really, its role was to go wandering through, so to speak, the neighborhoods to get people maybe a little less frequently, but more directly into the neighborhoods. Those stops were less of a negative and more of a positive, that we were getting people closer to where they wanted to go. Also, those buses being less frequent, it would be more of a disadvantage if you saw a bus go by that's running every half hour as you're trying to get to a bus stop. But again, on a route where we have a bus every 12 minutes, there's going to be another bus coming shortly. And we also limited it to looking at stops that were within about 600 feet of each other, which is about half of our guideline distance of how close stops should be spaced. So these are stops that are basically within a block or two of each other. And then from that, we looked at ridership data. We did get feedback. We would continue to take feedback on stops. They're much easier, I won't say easy to adjust, particularly because of accessibility issues, which I know is of interest to this group as well, but they're easier to continue to look at. So if there's a particular stop that's of concern, please let us know. But in general, a lot of these are ones, for example, there's a stop on the E4 I know about, which they're like stop on either side of 16th Street. There are other places where you have stops that are that close together. So those are the ones we were primarily looking at. We also, some of these 500 stops.
You mean looking at the cut?
Right. So we basically looked at having stops. If it was a major, you know, multi-lane highway, that's a different story. But if it's a relatively, you know, regular sized street to cross, making, you know, one stop at a corner, the best stop for transferring. So those sorts of things were the ones that hit the, you know, are on the list to look at. But as I certainly agree, it is a trade-off between our different markets. I would also say that when we talk about making buses faster, there's a lot of other changes we did as well in terms of making routes more direct. You can only do so much with the street grid that exists, but we try to improve that as well. On the Prince George's County coordination, they were a major part of the study. We worked to redesign their network as well. But again, both of us have to live within our current resources. They will take, you know, work we did and incorporate that into their future transit plans. But yes, it was a very coordinated effort. And we also, with them, tried to work out so that we were as efficient as possible. So in some cases, we have both our bus and Metro bus and a Prince George's the bus on the same street segment. We worked to see if we could spread those resources over to more areas by separating those routes out in some cases. I don't know, William, if you have any other examples of our work with the county.
Yeah, so throughout this process, we've been working to try to expand the availability of services within Prince George's County by having certain corridors and communities be served by either Metro bus or the bus. And so we're working through that coordination now, and we'll be continuing in places where there are shared services. We'll be working to make sure that we can provide maximum amount of service possible in terms of lining up schedules and the like. But then in this process, we'll also be working to ensure that the areas that need service have service, and to make sure that there are no gaps in service as we work through what those as we work through implementing the network within the county. And while I heard the conversation, I understand and acknowledge that there are some questions into places of concern. So as that information is shared through the proper channels, I will work in with my counterparts in planning with Prince George's County to identify and address those as they come about.
William, I think in the Washingtonian Magazine article that I circulated to our committee today, there was mention that the Prince George's ride-on system, I'm sorry, the Prince George's the bus system would be taken over by WMATA. Is that true or just, is that true?
No, in short. However, there is work that we're doing in terms of where there are communities and corridors that will be served by the bus exclusively, and there'll be corridors and communities that'll be served by Metro bus, which is all within the plan and the materials that are on the website. And these are areas where we thought, instead of having sharing of services, that there were certain corridors where Metro bus could provide that added benefit. And then there were certain corridors and communities where the bus can provide the services that are needed. So there, so the bus will continue to operate. And so we're just working to use the resources that we have collaboratively and collectively available. So I hope that answers your question. But in short, there is no takeover of services.
Okay. And when you say the bus, you're referring to Prince George's County's system of buses.
That is, yes. May
understand that the bus is a company as opposed to the bus, any kind of bus. Anu, could you call upon the hands up in order that they were put up?
Sure. So Chair Kalabi, just to for your information, it is 5:33 and we have several hands up. Whereas we also have one more topic of discussion along with public comments. Would you like to, how would you like to handle it? Did you want to continue with the questions and give adequate time for this current topic and reschedule the next topic to December 9th? Meeting, or how would you like to handle that?
Well, the final discussion is on winter shutdown.
Yes, and that's from December 20th or 19th or something like that. Our next bus rail meeting would be on the 9th. Yeah.
Well, I apologize to Bobby Gilchrist, Erica Cunningham, and then the others, well, Teresa Thomas, for shutdown, but this is such an important topic, and the winter shutdown doesn't occur until at least next month. Could we hold off on that and finish with the better pub bus redesign project?
Sure. So in that case, we have Denise Rush, followed by Doris Ray, then Sandy Newsell and Steve Kaplan, and then Pat Sheehan. So Ms. Rush, go ahead.
This is Denise Rush. The main concern is I went to several pop-up meetings and was told that the area of concern with PG was Route 210. And they assured me they were going to pay attention to 210, and it's been dropped. And for years, we've been trying to get some type of service. And when you say the bus doesn't equal what service is needed. It doesn't move on the weekends. It doesn't give you the hours. It may give you 8:30 to 3:30, but what happens if you're at work still at 3:30? We have to get equal service. We're not getting that on the weekends. And we have never gotten it in PG. I don't understand why this area is ignored over and over and year after year.
Any response, please?
I acknowledge and understand what you're saying, Ms. Rush. The Route 210 corridor, Indian Head Highway, has been a source of transportation concern for residents and commuters for as long as I've been in the region, which is 9 years.
It's been a source for over 20 for me.
So noted. Go ahead, Ms. Rush.
No, it's just, 20 years. I'm not going to make it 20 more years. I would like to see that corridor get some attention, please. Thank you.
You're welcome. And that'll be definitely a collaborative conversation because that involves not just Prince George's County and Metro. That does involve the state. So it's a little bit bigger than that corridor, is a little bit bigger than what we've been able to address. And we've tried to look at that corridor. I think accessibility is a challenge where we do need the state to be engaged in that, but that would have to be part of the broader conversation. So I'll keep that on my radar from where I sit. Ms. Doris, I think you were next.
Doris,
please unmute yourself.
Next.
I think she was trying to, okay. Doris, you are unmuted. Go ahead, please.
Yes. I've lived in the Washington metropolitan area all my life, back to when there was DC Transit and the rest. I am very concerned about this so-called better bus plan now that we're seeing it. I'm concerned that it's a Fairfax County resident, that in the making of this, we've cut bus service through the heart of my county to get me to my Fairfax County Government Center, where I pay my taxes and do whatever else, to various other places in the county. That situation for people who live in the 123 corridor over in McLean is no better than when I left there 30 years ago to come to a place where I could, where I would have better bus service. I am concerned about the cutting out of bus stops. This became an issue on Columbia Pike in Arlington and going out into Fairfax County, but particularly in the heart of Arlington, as well as Route 50, where I live, which is even worse because Route 50 has inaccessible bus stops, but inaccessible bus stops that are only slowly being replaced with accessible bus stops. But we're talking about a highway here, and you want to make people with disabilities and other people have to walk a long way to the next bus stop, so you're cutting out routes. But the last thing, because I only have time for it, is the naming of the routes. And the renaming of the routes is the system that I saw is very confusing, I believe. And one of the beauties when WMATA took over was that they didn't change the route numbers. So the S2 has always been the S2. The 50 bus, the Wisconsin Avenue bus, the 30 buses, those buses, once we've got them, you know, we're living here and we've got them in our mind, they haven't changed, so there's some stability to the system. And the system that I saw, like the renaming of the bus routes and the renumbering, using F for Fairfax, Falls Church, and the city of Fairfax, that doesn't tell you where you're going. What about the cross county city bus lines, like the 28A and its renditions, or the 16 or the 29, which go across jurisdictions? So it's going to be more confusing for people. And I believe that you should withdraw that for now. It's going to cost us a lot of money to rename. And if it becomes as confusing as I think it's going to become, it'll cost a lot of more money to change it again. And so I think we would be better if we're improving the bus stops, improving the routes and coverage, because everybody wants improvements in routes and coverage as well as frequency. That's the main thing all the studies that have been done in the region have shown. So I hope we don't rush to approve this, and I'm concerned about the accessibility throughout the system for people with disabilities, whether they're blind people like me, or whether they're wheelchair users and other people with physical disabilities and seniors. Please don't do this. And I wish you would have come to us before finalizing the name of the naming system. And the problem that I have here is that when you all were doing the outreach, it wasn't done in Fairfax County. There was no outreach that I am aware of at Fairfax County Government Center, in Reston, but Arlington was the place we had to come. Working people in Fairfax County didn't get to have input, just like the people over in PG. And I just really, thanks for hearing me.
You're welcome. Next.
Well, would you want to respond, William?
So noted what Ms. Doris has shared. In terms of the number of stops in Fairfax, they're not as many. The majority of the stops that are being considered for elimination are within the District of Columbia. I don't have off the top of my head what the numbers are in Fairfax County. We went through outreach looking at the places of greatest change in terms of where we try to do locations for outreach events. We couldn't necessarily go out to Reston, as there is no Metro bus service going out to Reston, but we tried to have it in other locations. I know that we did a pop-up during one of the Friday evening events within the city of Fairfax during the spring. We did do that, but do note it, the concerns. And the there is a team of people working on the destination signage, and the destination signage will still tell customers where the bus is going. And we're trying to also make sure that we say where it's going via its cross street. So Annandale via Columbia Pike will still show up on the destination signs, even though it will say F44 as opposed to the 16A, for example. But there's a team of people that are working on how to make that also helpful at the bus stop signs as well. So being able to provide that destination information at the signs. So that is something that is being worked on in the background.
I think there needs to be more dedicated discussion about this because there's not even time to say what I think. I mean, the whole business about changing the numbering system in the district from D and C, I go all my life, I've gone in and out of the district and across the district and even worked in the district and lived in the district. And it just makes no sense to me, and it costs a lot of money. I mean, I don't mind putting money into my transit, but anyway, I didn't mean to do that, but I think this is going to cause more trouble than you know.
William, before we go to the next questioner, did you say that all the bus stops to be cut are in D.C.?
I said the majority of them.
Oh, majority. Okay.
Majority.
Okay.
Sandy.
Next question.
And by the way, it takes an hour and a half, by the way, for somebody coming from, say, Fair Oaks Mall to Arlington, hour and a half or 2 hours one way to get there to come to a pop-up or you know, and you said, well, there was no need.
Okay, next question. Sandy, are you next?
I think so, unless Anu says otherwise. This is Sandy. Mm-hmm. A quick question, gentlemen. Your discussion of separating the bus from a metro bus route over in PG County so that you might wind up with the bus corridor and a WMATA bus corridor. This is asked somewhat out of ignorance. The bus, people who ride the bus, that is in conjunction with Metro in the sense that the bus corridor would also be served by Metro Access Paratransit. That's my main question.
Yes. So our Metro Access service area is actually the greater regional. It's one of the things that we actually do regionally. So we provide the coverage for all the local bus operators as well as ours. So
if you can expand the coverage of bus routes in PG County, you essentially effectively increase the area of Metro Access service in PG County.
And we looked at that actually. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but yes, we've looked at it. There are some places in Fairfax actually that Fairfax Connector is expanding service that will slightly expand the service area. There are a few places where these changes might technically reduce the area we were required to cover, but the board already in the last budget approved in last spring directed, because they knew that these changes could have an impact. Basically approved freezing the zone, okay. So not changing the zone that Metro Access covers through the next fiscal year, so all the way through June of 26.
Okay.
And during that period, we will be looking at where there might be impacts and what might, what those impacts might be. So there won't be any changes even when these changes go in. And I anticipate that there would be ultimately, if there's areas that need to be served, they'd continue to be served. But that's still a discussion that that's really a board decision ultimately.
Okay. And then very quickly, I've lived in Reston for Virginia for 47 years. I've not ridden buses very much. And part of the reason is I find the bus numbering system outrageously confusing. And I'm very much in favor of putting a letter followed that gives me a clue where the bus routes are going, followed by a number. So I, in contradiction to what Doris just said, I'm very much in favor of this new numbering system. So thank you.
Thank you. And that's I think, very indicative of the comments we heard in general. There are people that are very attached to the current system and people that are looking for a new one. I would say that this doesn't really cost us anything additional because we're going to have to change. There's so many changes. We're going to pretty much have to change every stop anyway in terms of signage and all that. So this is a once in a generation opportunity to look at that.
Next.
Steve, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. We don't have much time, so let me comment what I would rather ask a question, and perhaps you can follow up. Mm-hmm. I was the DC representative for the Better Bus Network for us, and the scope of it was remarkable. The number of comments that were solicited, the way it was done, and so I just want to say congratulations. Very impressed. I think we all are. Here, quick comments. First, speed is going to may be an issue because of obstructions that didn't exist during the surveys. One of them is a new set of islands on Columbia Road, which are turning two lanes into one. And I believe the islands are quite dangerous, but that'll be for another meeting. We don't have time for that, but that certainly will affect speed. And they're having 1.5 block backups now, including the 42, 43, and L2. So let you know. The other thing is, can you discuss with the city, the option of pulling down the restaurants that obtrude into the main thoroughfares? And I'm thinking specifically of Wisconsin Avenue, because come October, November, hardly anybody sits outside and they don't have heaters. Perhaps on an emergency route, the city would institute a policy where, let's say, between October and May, those need to be pulled down. And that's just we don't have time for a question on that. But the other thing is that I want to bring to your attention very quickly, would you look at the D6, like the David 6 bus? Mm-hmm. That's a critical bus that serves two hospitals. It serves Georgetown and it serves Sibley. A rerouting was done, supposedly for 2 months of construction, that's now not going to be completed till probably next year. And I think the rerouting was incorrect. Instead of just running it similar to the G2 as it has, and then turning it one block inward across the bridge, what was done is they're rerouting it on Massachusetts Avenue. And people who need to get to those hospitals, and I ran into a nurse yesterday who had this problem, they don't know where the stops are along that Massachusetts Avenue mm-hmm. corridor. So could you bring that to the right people's attention on that? And that's critical because they serve the medical centers and hospitals. And that's about it for now. We're running out of time. I'm concerned that there's not enough money to pull out seats for strollers, and there's not enough money to buy those digital readers. Let's put that off for another time and spend the money on integrating the Better Bus Network. So thanks very much.
Thank you for your comments, and I was taking notes, so we'll follow up on them.
Okay, yeah. Thank you, Peter. Thank you.
Thank you, Steve. Patrick, go ahead.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your briefing today. Let's see. First, I think the route that Denise talked about, what was it, 210 in Prince George's County? Mm-hmm. So that would be also a state highway administration has somewhat jurisdiction on that. It's not just Wamata or PG County. Am I correct on that?
That's correct.
Okay, good. I had forgotten that State Highway would have some input into that. So that'll be important for us when we look at that to bring in our state, our Maryland person, because WMATA can't just dictate that, because we have to coordinate between all three, PG County, WMATA, and maybe State Highway. Would State have the jurisdiction on that, primary jurisdiction, or WMATA?
Route 210 is a state highway maintained road. Okay. SHA maintains that. Yep. I know that there's been discussions at the county level, generally speaking, with the state about how to make that corridor accessible. So that mm-hmm. is, that's why, as I indicated, there's a broader conversation around that and how
county and that, state, right?
Yeah, how you address that.
Yeah, okay. Makes it much more complicated. Yes, got it. And then lastly, going along with what Sandy said, being able to take your buses, deconflict them so that they're doing more work in more areas is going to improve metro access. There are also, what was it, 19 or 14 independent bus routes, commercial bus routes that are also within the, I don't know if they're all within Prince George's County, but I think there are a bunch of them that hit the Prince George's County area. Does that mean that with those buses, they become part of the fixed route service, and we in turn could then expand metro access to encompass those areas too?
I'm not exactly sure if I'm understanding. Are
Did
you
I
saying
make that up? Right.
Is it? So, are you talking about private bus companies?
I think that there are private. Yes, I think there are private bus companies that are going to be part of the DMV Moves network. Does that? And if they become part of that network, does that mean that that's part of the fixed route system that Metro Access could service?
I don't think either William or I are speed on.
I'm sorry.
So the short answer, I guess the short answer is we would have to look back into that. That mm-hmm. is a broader, any independent bus service that's being provided outside of Metro Bus in the seven municipal service providers across the region. If there's okay. a service provider outside of those, mm-hmm. that is a bigger, broader policy question that has not been made to this level. So, in short, I will take that back to the person that's working on DMV Moves,
right,
and get that back to this group through ANU.
The right channels. Great. And I think I do know that's a complicated question, but if we can increase the fixed route service by redefining that they're part of the overall DMV Moves network, that means that Metro Access could serve more people in those routes without much increase in expenditure. Good. Thanks for that. Thanks, Tino.
Okay. It's 5:57. Anyone else with a hand up? I can't see hands up.
Chair Calabria, this is Anu. We do not have any additional hands up. Susan Bowmaster just raised her hand. Susan, go ahead. Susan, you need to unmute yourself. There you go.
Yes. I just wanted to say to everybody, I apologize that I came late, but I am here for the meeting, and thanks very much. It was a great meeting.
Thank you, Susan. Okay, we do not have any additional hands up, but Janice, go ahead. Janice Samuel.
Unmute yourself, Janice.
There we go. So as we all know that Metro Access clients need to live 3/4 of a mile from a bus or rail station to be serviced. Did I hear the presenter say that between now and the year 2026, Metro Access will not be expanded?
It will not be contracted. If we have to expand because there's new services that require it, it would be expanded for that.
Okay.
But in general, most of the changes we're talking about are within the area that it currently operates. So they don't have much impact.
Oh, okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, Janice. Any other members, if you have any questions? None. Chair Kalabe, we do not have any additional hands up at this point.
Do you want to mention your protocol for public comments?
Well, thank you, Peter and William, for your presentation. Much appreciated. Just want to remind any members of the public, if you have any questions or comments, you can submit them through email at metroaacchair@wmata.com or call and leave a message at 202-962-1100 and we will follow up. That concludes my announcement.
It is now 6 o'clock, and so I imagine we are adjourned. It's 6 o'clock. Thank you all for coming, and thanks to our guests. We are adjourned.
Thank you.
Thanks. Good night.